First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. Something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. I'm letting go of God, letting go of God.
And this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. That's one real... Excuse me, Wozo Radio, 103.9 LPFM, live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I'm Doubter 5, or Larry Rhodes, and I'm here with the Wombat.
Wombat!
There you go. You're coming in loud and clear, Wombat. He's on a telephone connection, so we had to test that and set it up earlier, but he sounds pretty good. This is a live atheist call-in radio show. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, and the sciences. That's it. Lost my place. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll hear them right here on this program and generally on this station. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that exist here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it. No, tell me about it.
Yeah, it's been broadcasting for over 6 years. That's right. And we'll be talking.
I don't believe it.
That's true. And we'll be talking about that, too. We'll give you lots of details about how you can call in and participate. Our call-in number, speaking of which, is here in the station for the radio show, is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. And our topic today will be sympathy for the devil. I believe that was something you thought of there, Ty, or Wombat. So
sure.
You want to drop us into the subject?
Yeah, so I hope I'm coming in clearly. I'll try to slow down my talking speed. But I'm really excited because I had considered what a devil's advocate is. I looked up the definition. I've always knew the term, but I never really thought about it until... just a couple of weeks ago. Are you familiar with the term devil's advocate?
I am. Mm-hmm. That's when you take the opposite position. Say somebody and you and somebody else agree on a position, but you wanted to flesh it out real good, okay. So you wanted to, like, take the opposite position so that the person could argue about it and maybe sharpen his arguments.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I had a very general... widely accepted position, as in God's the good guy, the devil's the bad guy, and that's just the way how it is, you know? Mm-hmm. And we have our angels, and we have our little devils, or our imps running around doing bad things, we have the imps doing bad things, we have the angels doing good things. Uh-huh. But I consider if I were to take a devil's advocate and just try to figure out what makes the devil the bad guy, because we spend so much time talking about why God can... is considered by others to be good, but it's not necessarily justified, mm-hmm. Is the devil justified in being bad? And what has he actually done that makes him so unappealing? So I try to take a devil's advocate approach to that.
Okay.
And what I want to do today was talk about what are some of the worst things the devil has done in the Bible, and does it measure up? If he was sent to court, what would he be guilty of, if anything?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's not been actually... demonstrated that the serpent of the Garden of Eden was the devil, but it's commonly believed that it was. So if that's the case, then the serpent would have been the devil, and he would have been one responsible for attempting even to performing the original sin and damning humanity for the rest of eternity.
Okay, so we're going all the way back.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, we've got to start at the beginning.
Yeah, like if we were to go all the way back to the book of Genesis, if we were to assume that the serpent was an embodiment of the devil, what did he do? Well, I mean, he just told people to eat fruit, right?
Yeah, he told them the truth. He told them that even though God said if they ate the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil that they would die, and he knew it wasn't the case. He knew that God was lying, and he told them that. And he told them so much. He told them that he was lying and that they wouldn't die. And of course, they ate the fruit and they did not die. But but a lot of religious people will say that. Well, they didn't die in the flesh, but they died in spirit. However, it doesn't say anything like that in the Bible. That's a later interpolation and interpretation of what happened. It's an apologetic.
So actually. I think you said. So I think, yeah, I totally get what your point is. But I would say that in a situation like that, what is the serpent in that story responsible for? Like, maybe he did a bad thing in terms of, like, telling them an honest assessment of what would happen if they eat the apple, which turned out to be true. They would know what life and death is.
Right.
They would lose their innocence in the Garden of Eden. Sure, he told them that, and maybe he even tempted them and said, hey, you know what, that tastes really good, but God says don't eat it. Yeah, but, you know, God's ultimately not telling you the truth anyway. Obviously, this world that you're situated in isn't going to be set up for you. Like, obviously, if this is paradise, how bad can this apple be? Why would we put a trap in the middle of paradise, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, he could even set it up like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is ultimately responsible for the downfall of man, then shouldn't Eve and Adam get a free ticket to innocence still? Because ultimately, who is responsible for falling? If it falls on Adam and Eve, then shouldn't the snake be walking away free?
Yeah. Well, the thing about it is, God is supposed to know everything. He should have known that this was going to happen. I mean, if he knows everything, then he knew that this was going to happen. Then why did he go ahead and put this tree in the Garden of Eden in the first place? I mean, it's like, almost like he was setting a trap. I mean, that's almost exactly what it is. He's setting a trap for humanity to fall. And what does he do afterwards? Oh, he comes sauntering through the garden saying, where are you? I don't see you. Where are you? It's like he's playing mind games with humanity at the very hour that they needed him the most.
Right. Yeah. I would also say, you know, that whole thing seems to be a setup because there is a prophecy that was written at the beginning of the dawn of man, at least as far as Christianity is concerned, where Jesus would need to come, he would need to sacrifice himself for the good of all men so that they would have a route to get into heaven and share eternity with God. But that wouldn't have taken place unless Adam ate the apple, and that could have been possible unless the serpent gave Adam the instructions to eat the apple.
Right. Another thing.
It seems like we have this entire setup where we're blaming one aspect of it for having everything taking place afterwards. Mm-hmm. But really, that was the plan from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Right.
At the conception of the universe by God.
Uh-huh. And the devil, or the serpent, was just playing his part. If he was a serpent, he didn't have any legs. And what was the punishment that God gave him? No legs. Forever and ever, no legs. But he was a serpent. He had no legs. No, what always got me, in addition to all this stuff, was the fact that Adam and Eve did not know the difference between right and wrong. I mean, they had to eat the apple to learn the difference between right and wrong, right?
Right.
Good and evil, right and wrong. But how did they know it was wrong to disobey God?
Apple. It makes me wonder, did the snake know what the difference between right and wrong was? Was it possible to sin at all until the apple itself was eaten? Because if it was impossible to do right and wrong at that point, then if right and wrong did not exist even when the snake was telling Adam to eat the apple, then he still didn't do anything wrong. He was still following the plan.
Yeah.
And I'm only saying this as a devil's advocate. It seems to me like the snake was put in a situation where the cards are already played for him. He was just playing his role. He wasn't even tricking intelligent, willful beings that were acting on their own volition and morality. They were basically just cogs in a machine that's already been set up for them to pick the ball, and they couldn't tell or discern right or wrong in their own right.
Right.
And the snake was just basically playing a bit part in a master play that was written by God. I can't say that I blame him.
Right. Well, not only that, but if you think about the analogy or the lesson to be learned from this, I mean, the overall lesson is that religion doesn't want you to have knowledge. I mean, God is represents religion, and the apple represents knowledge, and mankind eating or getting knowledge is bad. It's just the whole point of the story is
to be the most religious.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the devil, his role was actually an enlightenment of mankind.
Sure. Yeah.
Otherwise, mankind would have spent the eternity serving God in the Garden of Eden as basically a pet or a slave. And the devil, or the serpent, if you call it that, kept that from happening. He gave them the knowledge so that they could become self-realized and become full.
Let's put a fork in it. Let's say, okay. Hey, devil, we're on the climb of sending all of humanity out of the Garden of Eden as part of the fall. Are you guilty or not guilty? What do you say?
Well, I either guilty or it deserves credit, depending on which way you look at it. And besides, it never says in the book itself that the serpent was the devil, but if we take that as a given, then yes, I would say he deserves credit for leading man out of ignorance. And that's, I think, Levian Satanism, certain forms of Satanism, take that very tack, saying, you know, the devil actually gave us the greatest boon, and he's certainly nothing like the monster and the devil, I mean, in the Bible, that God is. Let's talk about, if you want to go on to the next subject, how many people that God killed versus the devil? Are you through with the Garden of Eden?
Let's go for it. I'll say, just for me to close that topic, I would agree with you and say that the devil has been guilty, if anything, of enlightening people by getting us out of the garden, giving us that apple, giving us a path to understanding some knowledge.
Yeah,
if you were to take that story as a serious story,
right.
It seems ultimately that, hey, the character that does the most good, despite the most severe consequences, is serpent.
Yep.
So kudos to that character.
Right.
You're not guilty for hurting us. You actually helped us out a lot. Let's go to the next topic.
Okay. How many people did God kill versus the devil? Is that what you're wanting to do?
All right.
Well, I think I've seen a count where people have gone through the Bible and just counted up all of the numbers that were represented by the plagues and by direct killing and by wars that God had ordered. And there was something like 23 million. But that doesn't count the total populations of about 63 cities that God ordered sacked and plundered, or the population of the entire world at one time, except for four or five people, and the flood. So God killed, well, let's just say maybe upwards toward a billion people. How many people did the devil kill?
I don't think he's killed anybody.
Yeah,
at least there's no record of it.
Yeah, in the story of Job, he had.
Oh, let's say Job. That's next. Yeah. Possible. I'd like to talk about Job in the next subject. I have lots of things to say about that.
Okay,
as far as I'm aware, go for it.
All right, I don't know that he killed anybody outside of the story of Job, he didn't actually do it.
And to put it even more contrast, I don't even think God is shying away from the people he killed in this story. He sounds more or less proud of the genocide that he's taken part in.
Uh-huh.
There's stories where he's boasting about the number of people he's helped to kill by fighting a certain faction during wartime, where, you know, you have an underdog set of people who are going up against maybe 10,000 people who are anti-Hebrew, and he joins one side, and then he kills with the Hebrews all these other Palestinians or Samaritans or so on.
Yep.
And they glorified for it.
Right. Yeah, as far as just outright murder, I don't think that the devil's responsible for any of it in there. Now, can you think of any?
No, I don't think that's the ins and outs of, like, try to kill or torture people. Kill or even torture. I think what he largely just does is make suggestions, and those suggestions could lead to people making a decision on their own right to try to kill.
Uh-huh.
But he doesn't empower people to kill. He doesn't actually side with a fraction to kill another fraction. He doesn't give some groups powers to cross rivers or break down walls or tear down buildings and topple homes on top of innocent bystanders or flood people's homes with water that magically comes from whether it's the sea or underground.
Right.
It's not his standard motive of operation.
The devil?
Yeah.
Right. No, I agree. I can't think of any place in the Bible where he was responsible for actually killing people. If you
so
do,
if
you're in the audience and you would like to, we have
so
a lag.
In terms of genocide, would you give Satan a guilty or a not guilty?
The devil? I'd say not guilty. But what I was going to say was, if you're in the audience and you're listening and you'd like to chime in on the subject and you have some information for us, call 865-333-5937. We'd be more than happy to get your information and talk about it. No, I can't see where that has happened. He has tempted Jesus, and he is supposedly responsible for some stuff in Revelations, but I don't know Revelations well enough to know that. But there's nothing prophesied in Revelation that wasn't authorized by God or Jesus, I wouldn't think. I mean, if the devil comes through and kills people, it's because God wanted him to.
I mean, that brings up a great point, because you just mentioned Job, and I was going to say the closest we had ever gotten to Satan actually killing somebody was him making the suggestion to God himself, saying, hey, you know a guy that loves you very much, Job? I bet that if you kill, like, his family and all the stuff that he owns and burn his house down, he'll just start cursing you, because I don't even really think he likes you that much. And God, in all of his infinite wisdom, says, I'll pick that bet.
Yep. And lets him kill Job's family, all of his livestock, et cetera, to try to get Job to renounce his belief in God, or at least his obedience to God.
But it was God who did the killing, though. Like, he's the one who sent the storms. He's the one who killed the crops. He's the one who chose the death for all of his sons and families, and also rewarded him with new families once everything was done.
Yeah.
It was only Satan there in heaven. I don't know how he got there, but just chilling with God and watching the bet take place.
Yeah. Wasn't Satan one of his angels that fell from heaven? That's a story that I've always heard, but I don't know where it is in the Bible.
Sure, yeah. There is the story of the fallen angel Lucifer. I'm not sure, I got to be honest with you, I'm not sure the details of that story, where it came from. I'd love to learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have talked about who Satan is as far as the Muslim version of him. In the Quran, he is very much, well, there's like, he's a jinn, which is kind of like a demon.
Yeah.
But really, it's a being that existed before Earth was created. And the concept of him is that he doesn't have more power than Allah. So it's very similar to like the God version or the Christian version.
Uh-huh.
But his sole influence is that he gives temptations to people by showing them benefits for them to do bad things or things that are necessarily Quran or just against God's nature.
Yeah.
And he only points out the benefits that people can gain from going against the will of God. So it's very similar to like what Christians have.
Mm-hmm.
But he never really goes out of his way to actually hurt or kill anybody.
Right. Of course, theoretically, he's going to torture you forever out in the afterlife. But of course, even if that's true, that's because God wants him to, because you didn't worship God enough in this life, or didn't obey God, or love his son. So that's love with a gun to your head. But anyway, it's something that God wants him to do, not something that he necessarily wants to do himself.
It's a very weird situation. So I guess I'll ask you a genuine question. Is it Satan's job to be the manager of hell, or is he also being punished along with everybody else?
Don't know the answer to that. That is a good question. If you're a listener and you have the answer to the question, we would love to hear from you. But we we're going to have to take a break here in just about 5 minutes. In the meantime, let's talk about the TV show that we mentioned a little bit earlier. We'll get back to the subject after the break and talk about Job at that time. Let's see. The Atheist Call-In Show in Knoxville, which has been broadcasting for over 6 years, is called Free Thought Forum. It's on Tuesdays at 5 to 6 o'clock on Comcast Channel 12. That's Community Access TV. If you don't have cable, you can always watch it on YouTube. Well, not YouTube. I'm sorry. Streaming live at ctvknox.org. So it's on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192 or streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of these shows where a fan has been recording them and putting them up on YouTube by going to YouTube and just searching for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. That's three words. Free Thought is one word. Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you like the program that you're listening to, we're on every Sunday at 6 o'clock from 6 to 7. And we'd be more than happy to have you call in and talk to us. This is an Atheist Call-In Radio Show. If you'd like to get together with atheists, other atheists, you can find 20 to 30 of us getting together every Tuesday night down at Don Gallo's Mexican Grill about 5:30 to 7:30 for happy hour food and drink and conversation. That's on near the Pellissippi campus on Harden Valley Road. Everybody is welcome. Just if you plan to come, don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Also, there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee who've been around longer than the Atheist Society. Atheist Society of Knoxville has been around since 2002. RET has been around since 1995, I think. And they've meet at the Pellissippi State Campus the first and third Sunday in the Goins Administration Building, which is in the cafeteria annex. Just follow the signs. Or go to the website, rationalist.org, and click on directions. If you have anything you want to say before we go to the break?
I want to talk about staying after the Armageddon.
The what?
Let's find out what Revelation stories about the devil.
Oh, I don't know much about the Revelation and what it says about the devil in Revelation. Do you?
Cool. Yeah, let's delve into it after the break.
Okay. In the meantime, since we're on the subject, I'm going to play Sympathy for the Devil by Rolling Stones, and we'll be back in about, 5 minutes or so. It's a 6.5 minute song, but I'm going to cut it short so we can get back to the conversation. Anyway, the first thing is about Rationalists of East Tennessee, then we'll go into the song back in a little bit.
Do you find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain. Made damn sure the pilot washed his hands and sealed his fate. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guess my name. St. Petersburg, when I saw it was a time for change. in you with the nature of my game. Ah, yeah. I watch with glee while you keep their queens for the tender case. For the gods they made, I shouted out, who killed them Kennedys? When after all, it was you and me. Let me please introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I lay traps for troubadours who get killed before they reach Bombay. Good to meet you. Hope you get my day. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my day. Oh, yeah. Get down in it.
About Satan before the break, but we didn't get into Revelations. We want to get into Revelations now, Wombat.
Yeah, let's get into Revelations. Let's also capstone what we've covered so far.
All right.
I think we've agreed that as far as what Satan's done in the Bible compared to what God's done in the Bible, Satan's done far, far less. Although he's depicted as a pretty crafty guy, and he's probably caused a lot of misery for a lot of people. The Bible would not look the same. How would the Bible be? I mean, how would we be without his actions? Would we still have access to knowledge? That in general, what do you think would be like if we didn't have like Satan in the
who knows
Bible at all?
We wouldn't be out of the garden, apparently. We'd still be there. Adam and Eve might still be living there, as far as we know.
Sure.
They did not eat from the tree of life, so they may have passed on and just, you know, have children and them grow up and die just like normal. But we would all be like sheep. We would all just be like any of the other animals wandering around in the garden. Without the difference between right and wrong, we would be doing all kinds of things without even knowing that they were wrong. And, of course, if you don't have the knowledge of right between right and wrong, then is it actually wrong? I mean, is it really wrong for a lion to eat a gazelle, and murder and kill, you know, and eat a gazelle? No, because it's right. What he needs to do. It's part of nature.
I'm wondering though, if you don't even know what right or wrong is it possible to disobey anyone?
Right.
I mean, I can understand not being able to follow an order, but I can purposely disobey someone to the point where I deserve to be punished if I have some sort of will of my own to exercise.
Yeah.
But if I literally don't have a concept of what the right thing to do versus the wrong thing to do is, mm-hmm. how can I be blamed for really anything?
Right. Especially blaming you and all of your descendants for the rest of time. I mean, it's bad enough that you blame somebody for doing something that doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. But then blame all their children and all their neighbors and every other human on the planet and punish them forever for the original sin.
Like in the U.S. Oh, go for it. Sorry, Jennifer.
For the original sin. And the only way that he gave us to get around it was he had his own son murdered at our hands to offer a sacrifice for us. I mean, God didn't have the power to forgive us without that. I thought everything was within his power.
You know, we have laws in the U.S. that protect, you know, people who are mentally disabled. If they're in court, we have laws in the U.S. that protect the juveniles who may commit crimes, but they're not old enough to be tried as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
We have several kinds of laws that help people, like, you know, echelons of laws that help people who don't have the capacity to be fully cognizant of their actions and how their actions actually have consequences mm-hmm. on other people
right.
before you start trying them as an adult mm-hmm. in a courtroom. And because of that, I just feel like Adam and Eve's situation is probably the most extreme, more than any other human being, because they are more than just children. They are essentially just sheep that were designed. They have no other concept of what humanity is aside from each other.
Yeah.
And really, Adam has an even weirder idea of what humanity is because he's never seen, you know, a mother. He's never seen kids.
Right.
He's never met another person. Or he's never met a person who wasn't literally the anthropomorphization of his own rib.
Right.
That was just back to life one
right.
day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird situation for those two. And to judge them so harshly, more than anyone ever been judged in their entire lives, and any human being ever. It just seems like a ridiculous thing.
Yeah. Well, not only that. I mean, in addition to that, God told them that if they ate the apple, they would die. Well, in Garden of Eden, had anything ever died in their environment? Anything at all?
Right.
They didn't even know what to die meant. You know, this is another foreign concept to them. But they're to be held responsible. For doing something wrong when they didn't know the difference between right and wrong or what the punishment was or meant.
Right. It's very much a story of like, also, you know, if I could just take a really small tangent here, like, what were they supposed to do with their lives? I mean, did they have any form of doing anything that gave them meaning? It says in the story of Genesis 2 that God gave Adam the job of naming the animals.
Uh-huh.
But we don't use any of the names that he used.
No.
We speak many different languages on this planet, mm-hmm. and none of us speak the original language that Adam and Eve spoke. Let's say they're actual people. Who knows what language they spoke? Their entire work was lost in time. And
yep.
if that was going to be the case, like, I mean, if that was going to be the case that Adam Schaub wasn't naming the animals, what kind of a purpose would that really have in the long term if we're here today and no one knows any of the work that he's done? It seems like he was just given a time-killing task.
Yeah.
He could have been bored out of his mind, and then all of a sudden this talking snake comes by and says, listen, you got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
There's a better life ahead of you. You just need to go and eat this thing and start this process, because you got to get moving. It's like, yeah, I'm bored as hell. Let's do it.
Yeah. I know. It's unconscionable that God would punish them with such a horrendous punishment simply for doing something he knew that they were going to do in the first place, and he set up all the conditions for it to happen.
Right. And you know the weirdest part, and I know this is going to be a stretch, but it would be impossible to kill Jesus on the cross if it wasn't for Adam eating the apple in the first place.
Right. Right. It's like Satan played his part through let everything else play out. So did Judas, for that matter.
So, every Christian should be thanking Satan for what he did in the Garden of Eden. Because if that didn't happen, there would literally be no way for Jesus to sacrifice himself on the cross, because people would be immortal at the time.
Right. And think of the Holocaust, when the Germans and most of the world, thanks to the Catholic Church, were blaming the Jews for the death of Jesus. Well, if Jesus didn't die, there would be no Savior. There would be no resurrection, no redemption, no heaven, no eternal life for them. It was something that had to be done according to the Scriptures. If it didn't happen, we would all be screwed.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page here. Mm-hmm. And if we can just get to what we were talking about with related to Job, I think if I were to consider what the story of Job was, much like how I was to consider the story of the serpent in the Garden of Eden,
mm-hmm.
here you have an example where the devil is invited to heaven. He's talked about in the story as being the bad guy, but all he's really doing is shining a light on how willing God is to punish unnecessarily the people who love him most and just cause nothing but stress in their lives just to win a bet. As much as, you know, the devil is shown as a demon or as an evil light, I think the real good person or the weird protagonist in the story,
the villain,
along with someone who's just an innocent bystander, is the devil for trying to secretly convey just how evil this God is, people who are willing to look at
it. And who the real villain is in that situation as well.
Yeah. It's a really, really scary thing. To think that you could be living a perfectly normal life, perfectly happy, and then somewhere in another realm, God is having a conversation with one of his angels. He's just like, you know, Steve, I like Steve, but I bet if God, if you just blow up his home, kill all of his family, he'll start, you know, cursing your name. And God's like, I'll take that bet. Where's the Steve button? And he pushes it 1,000 times. And then, you know, Steve, you know, our poor Steve here on Earth, his family blows up, his car loses all its tires in the middle of the road. He gets in a car accident. He's disabled from the neck down. People are wondering what's happening to him. And he's trying to do his best and believe in God no matter what. That's what he's been indoctrinated to do by society.
Yeah.
But for the most part, there's a God who really doesn't care that much about Steve as a person. And really, it's Satan in that Job story that's trying to shed a light on that. And I think that's worth recognizing, because here we are talking about it, and I'm appalled by it just even thinking about it.
Right. And one thing a lot of people don't realize about the Job story is, you know, they always think that at the end that Job got his family back and got his children back and stuff. But no, if you read the Bible, you'll find out that God didn't give him back his family. He gave him a new family, new children, a new stock. So screw the old family. I mean, this is just who would have accepted that as payment, I mean, or a retribution for killing his entire family and going from there? Forget that.
You know, it's true, because a story like that wouldn't fly if it was a Disney movie. Like, even Disney writers would know you can't just bring back any old family or, like, make them have 50 new kids. You have to bring back the old ones. it seems like the writers back then were just literally that amazing story.
Yeah. Well, the thing about back then, might made right. I mean, if you were a king, you could do anything you wanted to, and the people just had to live with it. Might did make right. Matter of fact, I've heard some people say if you boil down the entire Bible into two words, one word for the Old Testament, one word for the New Testament, all of the Old Testament would boil down to the word obey. I mean, it was like, you've got to obey. Obey, no questions, obey. You don't have anything else to do except obey. Now, the New Testament, apparently maybe they were losing people because of the message of the Old Testament. So they had to make sure that they believed all of this stuff. And if once you believe, then you will start obeying again. So you could boil down the essence of the New Testament in believe. And they give you all of these reasons to believe that Jesus was the Son of God and died for your sins and will come back and all of this stuff. So the Bible boils down to obey and believe. And, you know, there's no explanation other than, you know, the stories in the Bible, which are really more just anecdotal evidence to that end. And we don't accept that today.
I think we're overlooking the biggest crime of them all, in that if we were to compare God versus Satan, if we were to have some sympathy for the devil, we have a case where we have two different individuals. And between the two, one of them will, for the smallest transgression, actually commit you to a dimension where you'll suffer endlessly for all of eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one does not hold you by that contract whatsoever.
Yeah.
But between those two, that seems like a horrendous thing. So, like, if you, say, steal something as a kid and you never repent for it, that counts. If you steal something as an adult once, and, you know, sometimes, how do I put it? Sometimes you do things, you lie, you'll cheat, you'll speed on the road, you might bend the rules a little bit, you may commit a small sin. Those count, and if you don't get them repented, you are a sinner. In fact, even if you live a perfect life and you cause no sins, just by virtue of being a human being, you are, in the eyes of God, a sinner.
Well, yeah, that's where the original sin comes in.
And deserve being sent to hell after you pass away.
Yeah, the religions make sure that there are no exceptions to their rules. You're all born in sin.
It's one of those really depressing things where it's like these two figures that we have, God and Satan, we have clearly one. If people were just willing to look at it without, you know, the nostalgia filter that they've been given or the filter of fear that they've had instilled in them, you have two characters. One is clearly way worse than the other. So, and even if you want to call Satan evil, if you want to call him evil, then God has to be super evil. He has to be evil on a factor of at least infinity fold compared to what you have in Satan, because only one of them is going to literally torture people for all of eternity, for literally infinite time.
Now, you're talking about God or Satan when you say somebody's going to torture humans. Are you talking about God or Satan? Because most of the people today think it's Satan that tortures us.
No, it's God that sends you to hell.
Yeah, well, I'll play the devil's advocate. I'll play the Christian's advocate. They will say, no, you send yourself there. What do you say to that?
Oh. So could you repeat that one more time just so I can understand it?
Well, the Christian advocate would say, God doesn't send you to hell. You do. You send yourself to hell.
Okay. So here's this weird thing. If I was playing a game and someone was making up the rules on the spot, had the power to change the rules on the spot, and decided that I was also breaking the rules that they made on any instance, I'm really at their, how do I put it, I'm surrendering my ability to play or even participate to whatever win they're influencing the game. Because they have all the cards. And you have a situation where not only does God have all the cards in the universe, but he made a plan for how things are going to be today, tomorrow, and so on. And he knows everything that's going to happen.
Total power and knowledge.
Anything to happen that's against what he wanted to happen, it's a paradoxical statement. Because he ultimately has control over every facet of existence. And why are they not exercising them so that everyone can go to heaven? Why is there any suffering at all? Why is
right.
there any crime?
Right. He ultimately has to take responsibility for the suffering. Matter of fact, in the Bible, in Isaiah 45:7, it says, I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. So he's responsible for everything that goes on in earth. I mean, if there's evil on earth, he put it there. And he knew in advance all of the evil that would be caused by it. And he knew the people that would go to hell. I mean, their whole religion's built up about the predestination of humanity to hell, or the people that never, who are humans who will go to hell, that type of thing.
It's really, it's pretty laughable. All things considered, I would say, hey, this God figure is way worse. You want to know what's even worse? So I looked up what happens to Satan after the end of days, like when Armageddon takes place.
Yeah.
Turns out, in the first 1,000 years, he's going to be captured by one of the angels in God's network. He's going to be chained up in the form of a dragon for 1,000 years while people are still suffering in hell. And then after 1,000 years, he's going to break free, try to get more people to come on his side to fight against God,
mm-hmm.
and then ultimately lose that fight as well, because God's already written in the book that he will win that fight. I just got to say, like, from the perspective of God, that's got to be pretty boring to know that you're doing all this just to grandstand or make yourself seem so great and powerful when really you've been winning because you wrote the story. It's kind of boring.
Yeah. Not only that, but if there's anybody in the universe, both heaven, hell, earth, this universe, whatever dimensions, who knows God and knows his characteristics, it would be Satan. It would be the devil. Yet he fought a war with him twice, and he's going to fight another war. I mean, how stupid is that? Whoever wrote this story didn't take anything into consideration like that. I mean, there's 2,000 years of apologetics trying to patch the problems with these stories that they've got. And it's a tall order, and they try to do it. And they've had 2,000 years of some of the greatest thinkers on earth trying to do it, but it still doesn't make any sense.
No, it's pretty lame.
Yeah.
I would say, God, not so good. God, you're pretty bad. I consider you guilty of not only genocide, but just being a generally bad person. hurting people, torturing people, sending people to literally to suffer for all of eternity. As far as Satan goes, listen, you know, Satan, you gotta stop tempting people. That's not cool. I mean, obviously, that's not a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to what God's doing, we can give you free speech and just call you a butthole. For the most part, you're not really guilty of anything that's viewable to go to hell go to prison for.
Yeah, eternal.
So I'm willing to say, Satan, not guilty. Get out of here. The devil's advocate.
Yep. Now let's put God on trial. There was a movie that was actually put out about some Jews who put God on trial amongst themselves in a concentration camp during the Holocaust.
Okay.
Yeah, and God didn't come out too well in that.
Interesting. You know the name of that movie?
I don't. Maybe a caller will call in and tell us the name of the movie, but. Look for it. Type in Google movie Holocaust God on Trial, and I'm sure it would come up.
Okay.
Let's see what else.
So we're about near the top of the hour, right?
Well, we've got about 10 minutes left.
Okay. Hey, why don't you fill me on what's going on with the group in Knoxville? How are you guys doing?
About the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing great. It's like I say, we moved about 2 weeks ago to Don Gallo's on Hardin Valley Road, and it's been great. We've had anywhere from 25 to 30 people both Tuesdays since we've moved. A lot of people say it's not as cold, it's not as loud as the old place, and they're very happy with it. Of course, there are people who live downtown that don't like the move, and there are people out west who do like the move. So we're real happy that more people are beginning to come that didn't used to come. But, of course, they're missing some of the faces that were downtown. But all in all, I think it was a good move. The food is great. They have beer specials. They treat us well. it's a good place to have a few and have some great Mexican food and talk over the troubles of the world and solve all of them. Wish we're here. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, tell us what's going on up there. How's it going? You're in Kentucky now.
I'm in Kentucky right now, so obviously I can't hang out with you guys, so I really do miss you. But I would say that if anyone is in a situation like mine where they're seeking out people that they can talk to with regard to, or how do I say, if you don't believe in God, you're not alone, and you're looking for other people that you can talk to, there is, along with the many different kinds of online groups that they have on the internet, one that particularly stands out in my mind, and it's the Street Epistemology Facebook group. They have a private as well as an open Facebook group on Facebook. If you search Street Epistemology, you'll be able to find them. And what we mostly do is have conversations about the best ways to engage in religious conversations with people. These can be from strangers to family members to even best friends. Anyone that may either share a similar belief with you or a different one from you. And what we do is we network and brainstorm really cool ideas of how to open up the conversation, what to do if we get in particular corners with the way that we're conversing with each other. And, you know, we're improving slowly how to actually have really engaging and productive conversations. Some of us actually go on YouTube where we videotape ourselves having these conversations with people, and they're generally mostly always really, really fun. Even the people enjoy it, and it's cool to promote atheism or really just critical thought in a way that most people don't normally expect, where it's just this very jovial conversation between two people. Yeah. And I think, not to get politicalized, but I think with this election season coming up, or with this presidential season coming up, we can enjoy as much critical thought in public spaces as possible. So definitely something to check out. It's Street Epistemology on Facebook. And if not, you can just Google it, too, or also lead you to our committee page.
Street Epistemology. That uses an awful lot of the Socratic method, I understand. A lot of questions rather than statements.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We try to figure out not just what you believe, but really why you believe it. Because for the most part, and I've said this before, even before I even heard about this group, why someone does something is way more important than what they do. If I said, for example, I believe that, you know, I shouldn't kill people today because their frog underneath my bed told me so, and he talks to me in my dreams. It's like, okay, the conclusion that you came up to is great, but the reasoning behind it might need some work. And, of course, I wouldn't want to convince you to start going out and hurting people. But really what I want you to do is have a more logical train of thought to get to the conclusion that you have.
Sure.
And I want to improve mine, too, by talking it out with you.
Right.
And I am confident that if we both improve our thought processes, we'll both come up to a conclusion that's good for society.
Right. If the listener would like to look into the more logical processes, I would recommend they go on Google and look up logical fallacies. If you've got an argument and you go to somebody and they point out a logical fallacy in it, then you need to rethink that argument because your conclusion is invalid. If there's a problem with the premises or the arguments going to the conclusion, then you really need to rethink it. And that's what this is all about. See.
You know what I feel like it's time for some good news.
Okay,
what's you have any good news?
Do I have any? Oh
yeah.
Well, no. The rationalists of East Tennessee are holding elections now. They're gonna have new officers, new president, going forward starting next month. That's good, I guess. I'm the outgoing president, so I feel like Obama about now. I've got another couple of weeks to be president after 2 years. But
okay,
it'll be nice.
You're a great president.
Oh, well, thank you. I still have this other organization that I'll still be head of, the Atheist Society of Knoxville. So that'll take any extra time I have, I'm sure. I've got the website and the radio show and just all kinds of stuff going, plus a full-time job. So if anybody would like to be on TV on Free Thought Forum TV or on the radio show as a guest or co-host, contact me. You can write me at, I think it's Larry@digitalfreethought.com. And we can go from there.
I got a small piece of good news.
You got a what?
I got a small piece of good news.
Oh, okay, good.
So one of the closing acts, this is of another president that's about to leave office, President Barack Obama last week signed into law the Frank Wolf International Religious Freedom Act. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, he includes free thinkers in that. Is that what?
Before we had the Religious Freedom Act, where it mostly just protected anyone of any religion or any religious background, which was nice, but it left out the non-religious folks.
Right. They're no,
and
they
now
weren't,
now we finally have in explicit writing the Freedom of Thought Act that now protects the theistic and non-theistic beliefs as a right profess or not profess any religion.
Was that an executive action?
That was one of his last, yes, executive actions.
Okay. Yes. Can executive actions be overturned by the new president?
Hey, we'll see.
Boy, I sure hope not. But we'll see.
Yeah, he's still our president until, how do I put it, until Friday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll see. I think, though, I think it's a really good gesture. If anything, we are making more progress than we ever had because we never had something like this before. So if it's a glimmer that's taken away, I don't consider it a glimmer. I consider it a spark for fire to come.
Right. Okay, do you have any final words? We're about to close out.
Sure. My last final word would be, hey, there's a lot of people that might be apprehensive about the presidential election that's about, or the presidential turnover that's about to happen.
Yeah.
I just want to say, like, if you're afraid of any small steps that we're taking backwards, or any big steps we're taking backwards, just see them more as big leaps that we'll take in the future, because anything that happens now will inspire more change, more critical thought, more hungry people to show up at elections and make a difference.
Right. So true. I've also written a letter to my daughter to that effect. Basically, it's on my digitalfreethought.com website. It's the latest article that I put on there. If you'd like to read it, say, read the one that says open letter to my daughter on digitalfreethought.com. And before I close off, I'll say what I usually say. Don't sweat hell. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. And I'm going to close out this evening with God Said by Anthony David. We'll see you next week. That'll be next Sunday at 6 o'clock, same time, same channel. Hang in there.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people may not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. But ever since, they have been cursed.
Come shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks through me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said. What God said. What God said. Don't you put the blame on me. I'm doing what God said.
So you're praying for the death of the President of the United States. Do you think it's appropriate to say something like that? Or
I'm not saying anything. What I'm doing is repeating what God is saying.
In the name of the one who made us all, I will hide behind these walls from my enemies. Oh, by the power bestowed from up above, I will conquer you because it is my destiny. And with the righteous hand, I will bring you to your knees. I will strip you of your freedom
So you can't put the blame on me. I'm doing what God did. What God.